I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we are in Scotland. Well, we're not in Scotland. We're in Seattle. But I've got a Scotsman here. He flew all the way from Edinburgh today, and he's joining us to give an insight into his great country. We got Ken Hanley here. Ken has been a guide for over 30 years now in Edinburgh. He's my favorite guide in Edinburgh. He helped us on our TV show recently, and Ken's just got here, and he's going to talk to us about Scotland. So thanks for listening, and Ken, thank you for joining us.
No problem, Rick.
Hey, Ken. You're wearing a kilt. Now, did you have any trouble getting through customs in that kilt?
No, not really, no. It raises a few eyebrows, but I think it gives them all a wee bit of a giggle, Rick.
A wee bit of a giggle. But you wear a kilt just like I wear pants.
Absolutely. Why not?
Yeah. No big deal. Just the tourists think it's kind of interesting.
Sure.
But you're not doing it for a tourist stunt?
No. I've worn a kilt all my life.
You have. Now, are you Scottish first or British first?
Scottish,
all right.
Absolutely.
There's an interesting thing about this relationship between Britain and England and Scotland. I mean, it's hard for us Americans to imagine because, well, first of all, our revolution was beyond our memory, and we're not part of the British Commonwealth anymore. Yeah. Tell me, it's a little confusing. What is the geographical island, the name of the island that you live on?
Well, if you look at a map today, it'll tell you it's United Kingdom.
But the island, is it called, is there a name for the island actually?
UK or Great Britain.
Great Britain is the island. Now, UK, what does that consist of? United Kingdom?
It's a breakdown of all the countries that make up the United Kingdom.
Meaning?
So therefore you have Northern Ireland, Wales, England and Scotland.
So Northern Ireland is included in that.
Absolutely.
Now, Wales and Scotland are part of the United Kingdom, but I understand there's a little difference technically in how they are connected politically with England.
Yeah, I mean, historically, for instance, if we look at Scotland, historically Scotland has basically always been an independent country. But we formed a union in 1603, and that was the Union of Crowns. So in actual fact, the first king of Britain was James VI of Scotland and James I.
So he's a king of Scotland and king of England.
Absolutely.
Now, does Scotland therefore have more independence than Wales?
Yeah. Our autonomy today, the devolution of the Scottish Parliament is much stronger. It has enormous powers. It even has tax-raising powers, legal powers, and so on.
More so than Wales?
Absolutely, much, much more.
So Wales is closer to just a region of England?
Yeah, very much so. Whereas in Scotland, I think we see now with basically the Parliament coming home.
Right.
And again, that was another union.
Because you've got your parliament back in Scotland now for the first time since, what, 1707?
Spot on. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely,
now,
Rick.
Is that a big deal?
It is, in one sense. And in the other sense, it's not. To you, I think, and to the ordinary folks listening today, they probably think that's a big shift.
Yeah.
But for us, it's just the parliament devolving back from Westminster to Scotland, to Edinburgh, to where it belongs.
Where it should be anyways.
And it should be there anyway.
So how are relations these days between Scotland and London? Are there any real serious issues? I mean, there's no talk of secession, is there, anything like this?
I don't think there's any real issues. You know, as long as we build the wall high enough at the border and...
I gotcha. So I love the way the English and the Scots and the Welsh jab each other in generally a good-natured way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I got to say, you guys are, I mean, you fought valiantly against England. And then, I mean, you had all this Rob Roy, Braveheart, William Wallace, Mel Gibson stuff, right? I mean, there's this long, valiant history of Scottish patriotism.
Aye.
And then you lost.
Yep.
And then they outlawed the kilt, they outlawed the bagpipes, they outlawed all this stuff. And then eventually you become the fiercest warriors for Great Britain, the best of the Queen's military.
Yeah, I think.
How did that happen?
I think you've got to take your hat off to England, and they devised a simple method that was a conquer and divide mentality. And you know, the divisory thing was they introduced something alien to that culture, so it split the culture down the middle.
How did they split the culture?
By religion.
By religion.
Yeah.
Can you sum that up in a short?
Well,
bit?
Yeah, very, very, very simply. You just look back at the 16th century. You look back at the Reformation and Henry VIII. And if you draw a line across there, it opens up so much history, and then you start to understand the reason why the Scots feel the way they feel, and why you have what you have today. So it's quite simple. You look at Mary Queen of Scots, you look at John Knox, you look at Reformation, and you carry that from the 16th century through to the 18th century.
Scotland has such a spirit of independence. You've got John Knox. He was a great reformer.
Yep.
You got all the Catholic history of Scotland. And of course, the Scots were kind of allied with the French historically because you were both Catholic mm-hmm. and you had England between you.
Yeah. But, you know, most people are not aware that England was Catholic as well until Henry VIII decided otherwise. And we had to form a union with someone. We have actually the oldest alliance in the world with the French.
It's called the Auld Alliance.
The Auld Alliance. And
Does that show through even in cultural ways beyond just political alliance? I mean, I understand there's some cuisine connections.
Yeah, absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, culturally, historically, and cuisine, we think haggis is very Scottish, but I've done a lot of research, and the natural fact it was brought over by the French court with Mary Queen of Scots, the original recipe.
Ain't so. You mean haggis originated with the French?
A form of, yeah. Yeah, wow. We've got to be honest and give them their due, you know,
I don't know if that's a compliment for any cuisine. I mean, you're just trying to put haggis off on the French, I think. Haggis, haggis is this, I think every culture has as a miserable, old, traditional cuisine that is kept alive just so young people can remember the suffering of their grandparents. Would you say, you know, like lutefisk in Norway and so on, and ribollita, the stale bread soup in Italy and so on. Is haggis sort of a kind of just to keep
eye? No. I mean, haggis, you've got to be very skilled at catching the beast for a start.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then once you've got the beast, you've got to be very skilled at cooking it. And of course, it's cooked in the sheep's stomach. But you're absolutely right, yeah. I think it's traditions of the past. It's a tradition that is still with us, and we're very, very fortunate to have it. And when it comes down to it, it's a wonderful sight to see someone piping in the haggis and to address it, you know, in Old Scots.
So that's a big tradition. Now, I find Scotland, a great place to travel, but the cliches of traditional Scotland are a little bit disappointing and kitschy and gimmicky these days.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, you're a Scotsman. You're wearing your kilt not because you're meeting a cruise ship and you want to be a photo op, but you wear a kilt because you're a Scotsman and you're comfortable wearing it.
Yep.
But if you're looking for haggis and bagpipes and so on in Edinburgh, aren't you just unavoidably putting yourself into horrible cliches on stage with big tour groups?
Yeah. And it's there. And we can talk about it, but there's much more to it than that. We are a culture of much more than tartan and shortbread.
Yeah.
And I think that will come across over the period of the Grand Tour of Scotland.
So it's important not just to walk down the Royal Mile in Edinburgh and see the tartan shops and
Absolutely.
Eat some haggis. Now, how can a tourist break away from that? What is a tip for you to really feel the soul of Scotland?
I think if we're talking about Edinburgh, then we get down into the back streets. I think you look at the topography of the old town. You look at the topography of the city, and you have a medieval old town. You have a purpose-built Georgian new town, and peripheral to that, you have 21st century. And the world is literally your oyster. You can walk down all the little streets and lanes. You can merge yourself in a box grid Georgian new town and a wee bit further and you can go into Victorian and 21st century Edinburgh. So my tip would be you have a look at the Royal Mile. Of course you do. But you go up Arthur's Seat. Go down into Leith.
That's good advice in travelling anywhere, is just to check out the touristy zone. Go to the folk show if you want to, but remember you're going to be surrounded by Japanese tourist groups. And then take some time to walk down the streets and find out where people really live. Take a bus into a residential area and just get out and have lunch in a pub and wander around and talk to the people.
That's what it's all about. The old bell, the new bell, Cosby Side. There's a wealth of things like that.
I'm talking with Ken Hanley, a tour guide friend of mine, and Ken has flown into our Seattle studios from Edinburgh. And Ken's been a tour guide in Edinburgh for 30 years, and you wouldn't know it by looking at him. He's frisky as a young kid with his kilt climbing Arthur's Seat and checking out all the wonders of Edinburgh. We got some travelers on the line here. Linda in Falls Church, Virginia. Thanks for your call, Linda.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you. I'm doing great.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, my sister and my twin cousins and I are, the reason we're going is because our grandfather was born in Edinburgh and we want to just have a look and get the feeling for our ancestry. And we were wondering if there's anything we can do ahead of time to kind of enhance that part of the trip.
So they're checking out their family heritage. They're going to Scotland probably for the first time.
All of us for the first time.
Boy, that's exciting. Ken, how can Americans connect with their ancestry a little better?
It's quite a lot simpler. Yeah, you can get in touch with Register House, which is on the east end of Princess Street.
Okay.
And they have all the records. It's Register House. It's where we register deaths, births, and marriages. Or in Scotland, we say hatches, matches and dispatches.
Please.
So you could get in touch there, and if you have the relevant information, you would be amazed. And you can do it online as well, Linda.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
So that's called the Register House, and that's a place that welcomes Americans tracking down their ancestry.
Absolutely, open arms, and very, very reasonable as well.
Linda, I'd recommend checking it out on the web, and then you can actually visit that on your during your visit.
Yes, we'll plan on doing that. Thank you very much.
Great. Hey, thanks.
We're very excited about the trip.
Oh.
Bye-bye, Linda. Look forward
Bye-bye.
To seeing you.
And we have Joe in Reston, Virginia. Joe, how are you doing?
I wanted to mention the fact that there's other places in Scotland rather than the lowlands and the highlands, and that's the Outer Hebrides. My ancestors came from the Isle of Lewis, specifically Port Ness, and I just wanted to mention that so that people who went to Scotland more than once would go over there and see the Irish part of Scotland. Being near Ireland, it sort of mixes both cultures. Some of the music sounds more Irish than Scottish, but it's still Scotland.
No, wait a sec. Ken, is that right? There's an Irish part of Scotland, or how does that work?
No, but there's a Celtic fusion, I've got to agree with you.
So, Joe, you're talking about the Outer Hebrides, and I think very few Western or American travelers get out that far.
Oh, that's right. It's very expensive to go out that far. But the what I was saying is it's interesting. If you start from Lewis, you go from Lewis to Harris down to southern Unst.
Yes, southeast.
As you go towards Ireland, you start picking up the Irish influence, even though it's still Scotland.
I love that concept, Celtic fusion.
Yeah.
In fact, that there's one island, I think it's Unst, that's a Catholic island.
Well, you'll find, in actual fact, most of them are on the west coast, down that area. You obviously have a great knowledge. But the wonderful thing is that, and as you rightly say, Joe, people come to Scotland and it opens a door for them. And then they say, I'm going to go back again.
I just had another comment about where the previous caller, Linda, was going back to seeing Edinburgh because that's where their grandfather's from. And I think that when she gets there, she'll feel very humble because it's like, very few people can go back to a European country where their ancestors come from. And you get out there like me with Lewis or she in Edinburgh, and you think and you say, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, my ancestors were on this spot.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that the wonderful thing? But, time has moved on, but we've managed to retain somehow our culture, our past, against all the odds, which is an incredible thing. Wonderful.
Because there's some Americans that still think that Scotland's an independent country.
Well, long may that continue.
Right. Okay.
Joe, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
And good luck tracking down your ancestry in the Outer Hebrides.
Bye-bye, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Slange.
So, to review, most tourists go to Mull, Iona, Skye. Are those the Inner Hebrides?
Yeah.
And then it just takes a lot more money and time to get to the outer islands. But maybe you're more likely to find Scotland in the extreme, the traditional Scottish ways in the far western fringe. Is that true?
To a point. I think that the areas that you touch to get extreme, you've got to go to the Outer Hebrides. You've got to go further north. But the wonderful thing is that you get that fusion going up north, and you somehow instinctively know you're moving into the Highlands, and these cultures are there. But you have to go to the Outer Hebrides if you want the extremes of the cultures. But
and then, less homogenized by the modern world, like you'd find.
Very much so. I mean, there's areas that I go as a guide on a Sunday that I'm looked upon as almost a leper because it's a Sunday and we shouldn't be there.
Is that right?
Yeah, still today.
So very traditional. Well, we've got somebody, I think, who's actually traveled beyond that to the Orkneys, Maggie from Clark, California. Maggie.
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks.
Hello,
thanks for
how
your
are
call.
You? You
traveled to the Orkneys, huh?
I did. I was there in the spring. I was on a bird watching tour in northern Scotland in the Highlands in Nethybridge, and then I traveled up to the Orkneys on my own.
Wow.
And took the train from Inverness up and the bus over from John O'Groats and stayed in Kirkwall. And went touring with a local guide up there. He takes about 5 or 6 people around in his car to all the sites. And up there, the influence in Scandinavian because of the history of the Scandinavian people coming over.
Absolutely.
And it was just absolutely wonderful up there. It was
actually Viking sort of heritage?
Yes, Yes, very much so.
So it's kind of a Viking outpost 1,000 years ago.
Right.
They still celebrate up earlier and things like that.
Right.
The Arcadians consider themselves probably more north than actually Scots.
Now, yes. Maggie, you mentioned John O'Groats. That's the far north end of Britain.
Right. And that took a ferry from there over to Stromness, and then they have a bus that takes you either there to Stromness or Kirkwall.
What's Stromness, the capital of the Orkneys or something?
Yes.
Major town.
I think Kirkwall is the capital.
Kirkwall is the capital, yeah.
Stromness is the first stop that you take, and that's a little fishing village, whereas Kirkwall has the stores and the larger hotels and has a wonderful cathedral there, the Magnus Cathedral.
Isn't it wonderful, yeah.
And it just was. And then you go touring around the island, and you see all these archaeological sites and the Italian chapel.
Yeah, and Scarabri.
Now, was that worth all the trouble and time to get out there?
Absolutely. Yes, it was. And it wasn't any trouble. I mean, I think I left Inverness about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday or Tuesday and then got over there by dinner time.
You're kidding.
No, it didn't. It wasn't that long. So,
wow.
And I, as I said, I was traveling on my own, and people were very friendly.
Now, Maggie, if you have you traveled also in the Western Islands, Mull and Iona
yes,
and so on?
Yes, we went over there.
Okay, how would you, if somebody has limited time, how would you compare and contrast those two, the far north or the far west?
I liked Iona and Mull very much because of the church and the ruins on Iona. And we stayed at the Western Isle in Tobermory. And that was nice. That was a good place to explore the island.
You know,
Orkney has its own flavor because it's so barren and it's all farming. There are very few trees. It's windblown, so it's a different feel.
Now, you mentioned Iona. That's sort of a special place from a church history point of view. Isn't that one of the places where Christianity established a foothold in that part of Scotland? And going out there, you read about it and you wonder, can it really be that special? You get there, and even if you're a skeptic, there's something magical about the atmosphere of Iona.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maggie, what did you find about Iona? What's special about the little island of Iona?
Well, luckily it was a very sunny, warm, breezy day that we were there, and so we just hiked around the islands. And as I said, I'm a bird watcher, so we were trying to find this crake, which is out there. And there's a charming little bookstore that you wander in, and then you go in and out of the chapel.
Yep.
And it's just you spend the day staring off at the water. It's very relaxing and lovely, and it's a wonderful place to be.
It's very rewarding, isn't it, Maggie? I think, you know, there's some sort of magnetic pull there about Christianity as well. The nearer you get down to Fianna Fáil and getting over to Iona, it just seems to...
You're separate.
Yeah.
You take the ferry across the water and it's just a separate island and you're... it was quite, as you say, magical.
It's,
I agree.
It's very rewarding. It doesn't matter what religion you are, there's
a
spiritual homecoming there.
No, just the fact that people lived there and they raised their food there and survived.
And there's something about the visitors to Iona all have, maybe they're pilgrims or maybe they became pilgrims, but everybody has a little dash of pilgrim in them or spiritual quest when they're on Iona.
Yes, I agree.
Now, Iona is a short, an easy day trip from Oban. Oban is the major town there, an easy access by train and bus and so on. And then from there, you hop across the island of Mull to get to the island of Iona.
Right.
Maggie, thank you so much for your call.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye, Maggie.
Bye-bye. Flange. Thank you.
You know, Ken, there's been a lot of change lately. You got your new parliament building open up in Edinburgh. When did that open up?
Officially 1999, but the new parliament building opened up back in 2004.
Quite a striking building.
It is stunning, isn't it?
Very modern statement, isn't it?
I think so. You know, if you devolve the politics and the and costing, she's an architectural statement.
Oh, yeah. Is it generally accepted by the local people?
No. I think,
why not?
I think people get involved in budgets and what the media tell them, and it's a break away from traditional architecture. So
they spent a few extra pounds building it then?
Just a wee bit.
Yeah, so people thought that might better go into schools or roads, huh? Now, is there a prejudice between English and Scottish people that is, whether it's playful or not, what are the feelings between Scots and English?
You know, that's a loaded question in one sense, and if you want an honest answer, the honest answer, there is.
I mean, take sports, for example. I mean, if a Scotsman is on a British team, if he does something great, he's a British.
Aye.
And if he screws up, he's a Scotsman, right?
Absolutely. We say that all the time, you know. If we win, we're British, but if we get beat, we're the jocks from north of the border.
But you guys have done more than your share of fighting and defending the British Empire. I mean, really, I think statistically Scotsmen have shed more blood per capita for England than England has.
Of that there is no doubt, but I mean, you know, I'm not using that as a leverage, but that's a fact, yeah, absolutely right.
I mean, what, in World War I, half of all the men in Scotland were casualties or something like that?
In the war, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Half of all the men?
Yeah. incredible statistics.
That is incredible to imagine. And I mean, right now you think of the blaring bagpipes. It's look out, the Brits are coming, you know. But it's really the Scottish Highlanders, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the mentality with them was send the jocks in, you know.
Send the what?
The jocks, which is another name for the Scots.
Jocks?
Yeah.
Like jockstrap?
No, not quite.
What does jocks mean?
Well, it's another name for somebody who's a Scot. You know, they call them, hey, jock.
A jock, okay. You guys were the tough fighters.
Yeah.
So send them in, and you took the hits. Are they still enlisting Scotsmen into the British Army? Is that a big deal? Is there what's going on with, how do you get people into the Army these days?
Yeah, we're still enlisting. Back home, you probably won't hear about it in the States, but they're doing away with some of the regiments. They're doing, there's a lot of amalgamation. But yeah, I would say the percentage-wise is very high in Scots joining.
Now, is that because the Scottish people have less opportunity economically and the army presents them a job and some security?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. In actual fact, if you look at it, that's probably one of the major reasons, yeah.
So Scotland would be an economically disadvantaged part of Great Britain, therefore more of them join the military?
In some areas, that would be the case, yeah.
All right. Do people still speak? Is there a Scottish language that survives at all?
Absolutely. There's at least two. And I won't say English. We have Gaelic and we have Old Scots.
Do people, I mean, in Wales, people still speak Welsh.
Yeah.
In Ireland, people still speak Old Irish. Is there a people who speak Scottish like as a, I mean, not just a few polite words, but they communicate in their homes in Scottish?
Absolutely. You know.
Is it a Gaelic language or is it just English?
There's an actual Gaelic, and about 7% of the populace actually speak Gaelic. And in some of the islands that we talked about earlier on, it is the first language.
Wow. Now, if you're just speaking, you speak with a Scottish accent.
I don't think so, but yeah, everybody tells me.
Does an Englishman have any trouble understanding you?
I hope so.
Do any schools actually speak Scottish or teach in Scottish?
No. Scots is a language that's evolved through Robert Burns's times, and to be a true Burnsite, then you understand Scots.
Oh, so it's more of a Burns English.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like an Irish, the Irish language is not, it's not English at all.
No.
But Burns, can you say tell me a little Burns, a famous phrase from Burns or a little stanza of his poetry?
Yeah.
Because he was the great Scottish.
Oh, absolutely.
Writer.
I mean, we're talking about haggis, so in keeping with that, we can give you a wee rendition of Fair fall your honest, sonsy face, great chieftain o' the puddin' race, aboon them all, attack your place, bange, strife, and fear em. But will ye word the o' a grace as lang as my earum? But see the rustic labour dict. It cuts you up with bony sect.
You just pulled out your little knife.
Hey.
You had this knife in your stocking when you came on the airplane?
Not quite on the airplane.
So when you speak the Burns poetry, the old Scottish, your heart must stir as a Scotsman.
You know, I'm not just saying it for the interview or anything like that. Yeah, it does. And that is indicative of the Scots and our passion and our history.
Now, is there a defense in Scotland not to be bowled over by the mainstream media, the popular media? I know in the United States, it's like you can't have an accent and be on the mainstream press. In Scotland, in Britain, is there some attempt to keep the variety of the dialects and so on by letting Scottish people have their voice in the Scottish mainstream press?
Media. Yeah, that's a difficult one. But I think, yeah, the answer is that you very seldom hear someone with a broad Scots accent on the main news programmes in England, but whereas in Scotland, obviously, you do. And when you do hear someone, they usually are very broad. So hence, most people speak what we would call public school accent. That's a, you know.
But is that public school Scottish or public school English?
No, public school English.
Oh, it is. So it's just your BBC English that people will. So if you're a aggressive young communications major in Edinburgh and you want to get into the media, you better learn to speak the Queen's English.
Absolutely.
Even in Scotland.
Even in Scotland.
The weatherman in Edinburgh or Glasgow, he's going to speak with no Scottish accent.
Yeah, he has to, really. And I mean, it tells you that if you have what we call a public school accent, it doesn't matter if you come from Inverness, Aviemore, or the Borders, or Southampton, or London, or Wales, it will be the same throughout. In other words, in the States, if you lived East Coast, West Coast, it would be the same accent.
As a Scotsman, what are you most proud of?
Just that, and my history. I'm passionate about Scotland's history. For a tiny country to survive what we have survived over the hundreds and hundreds of years. It's amazing that our culture has survived, and I can only thank our forefathers who came to America and went all over the globe. They obviously done a lot of good for our country, because by and large we're held in high esteem. So that I'm very incredibly proud of that as well.
We're taking your calls and learning about Scotland with Ken Hanley on Travel with Rick Steves. 877-333-7425. That's 877-333-RICK. Or visit the radio section of our website to add your 2 cents and follow up on today's discussion. That's at ricksteves.com. And we have Jean on the line from Oakland, California. Jean, thanks for calling.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine. My father was born in Duntalker, which is, I believe, 7 miles up the river from Glasgow.
Duntalker, yep.
And I really don't even know how to spell it. And he was part French, so back to Haggis, you can blame him, I guess, or his people. I guess I need to know basics. I need that good planning so that I can be relaxed when I get there. The best time of year to travel to Glasgow, Duntalker, Edinburgh, what to see in Glasgow. The only stories I remember of Glasgow were of all the boys in the family and his father, my grandfather.
Well, first of all, Jean, you got to learn how to pronounce it, Jean. It's Glasgow.
Yeah.
Right? I'm always mispronounced also, but there's no L in it there. So, how do you say that?
Glasgow.
Glasgow. Good.
Glasgow.
Glasgow. Sorry.
You know, Jean, I think the world's your oyster, and, you know, whatever suits. But if you went any time May through September, I think you would find Glasgow or Edinburgh very rewarding for you.
Okay.
Glasgow now, you know, they say a leopard can't change its spots, but it's changed from an incredible industrial city now to a wonderful, vibrant city full of architecture, with city of architecture and design and so on. And I think you would find it very rewarding. The infrastructure to get you to Duntalker or through to Edinburgh and various places is all there for you, and you can check that out on the web.
You know, Glasgow has emerged as such an exciting cultural destination now, and it's really where the action is in Scotland in a lot of ways compared to in past times when, as Ken was saying, it was an industrial sort of depressing place. It used to be Andy Cap Town, right? I mean, this is where the cartoon character Andy Cap is from, in that whole accent. Is that right?
Yeah. No.
Now, if you have 4 days in Edinburgh, some people would say the best thing to do on that fourth day would be to take the train over to Glasgow. It's less than an hour to get to Glasgow. You could have a great day in a wonderful cultural capital that doesn't have much tourism. Get back to Edinburgh in time for your haggis.
Yep. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Leave Edinburgh in the morning after breakfast and back in the evening with haggis. Wonderful thought.
Good luck, Jean, in your travels.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Jean.
Are Scotsmen frugal or are they cheapskates?
You know, that line was probably written by an Englishman. I think if you went in a bar, seriously, the first person or one of the first people up to the bar would probably be a Scot.
Buying and everybody's drinks?
And that would be buying.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So you don't think the cheapskate...
That's a rumour about by the English.
All right. Speaking of pubs, is there a good, lively pub scene for the tourists to experience when they're in Edinburgh? What would your tips be that way to connect with people?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to connect. And American people love to connect. And one of the nicest places socially to connect is if you go into a pub. And there's a Bow Bar in Victoria Street. There's a Bell in Cosby Side. There's a wealth of these pubs.
Now, are these pubs, some of them high class, some of them low class, some of them different zones within the pub for high and low class?
No, I think they're all sort of middle of the road. I mean, there's a lovely bar that you and I had a beer in Leslie's.
Yeah.
You know, that was a lovely, architecturally, great neighbourhood, very
stimulating.
They call
it a local, right? Because it's just the neighbourhood living room.
Absolutely.
Now, most people think beer when they go to pubs, but in Scotland, a lot of it would be whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
What's the deal? Irish and Scots, they spell whiskey different.
Yeah. But we do it the right way.
How do you spell it?
Without the E.
Without the E. So in Ireland, it's EY, and with you, it's WSKY.
And don't ask why.
Don't ask why. Okay, I won't ask why. But what's the difference between Irish whiskey and Scotch whiskey?
Well, I mean, you
apart just need from
to,
quality.
Yeah, you just need to taste it. You know what I mean?
Okay. But chemically, what's the difference?
I think the process, to be perfectly serious, Rick, is not dissimilar. In actual fact, the Irish triple distill, whereas we single distill, and I'm talking about a malt, not the blends. But the end product, I think, is indicative of what the country has to offer. It's the barley. It's the water. It's where the whiskey is kept. It takes on these characteristics. And incidentally, most of it's kept in American bourbon barrels.
In American bourbon barrels?
Absolutely.
Made out of what kind of wood?
Pine.
Pine.
Yeah.
They aged in America with bourbon, and they want to use that to give the more personality to the whiskey.
It gives a characteristic
when
to
it ages
whiskey.
In Scotland.
Absolutely.
I'll never forget my experience this last summer in Edinburgh. At the top, they have that goofy Disney kind of whiskey tour. We call it Malt Disney. And then you'd ride a little – you actually ride a barrel through there and you get a taste of the whiskey. But then at the bottom, Cadenheads. Do you know this Cadenheads shop?
Yes, I do.
Little shop at the bottom of the Royal Mile. And the man there is so proud because he bottles whiskey straight out of the kegs. And it's not homogenized and colorized and whatever, uniformized for mass consumption. But it is for the connoisseur of whiskey, right?
Yes, and you can very quickly get to that, Rick, as you probably rightly found, or not, you did rightly find out, and it's what we call unchilled, unfiltered. So as you rightly say, it's not prepared to look good for the masses.
So you can actually buy that in the supermarkets? You just look for unchilled, unfiltered?
You can now, yeah.
Because he told me, he said, look at these famous bottles over there. All the names on those bottles, those people love their whiskey, but they don't drink it out of those mass-produced bottles. They drink it out of these little bottles directly bottled from the cask.
That's right.
He said it's not purified. It's full of impurities. And then we, like little children, we gathered around the wine, the whiskey, the little shot of whiskey in the glass. And he poured some spring water in there. And he said, look at the impurities bubbling up here.
Aye.
He said, it's like a garden when a spring rain shower hits it. It brings out all the fragrance. And I sipped it and I learned right then how whiskey can become a very good friend.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and within moderation, it really and truly is. But to take whiskey at that level and like that, it's not just for you and I. Everybody can do that. In other words, if they're aware, if the people out there is aware that that whiskey is available, which it is, then they can experience that taste of a lifetime.
And I had never in my life tried to understand the taste of whiskey. And right there in that little shop, it was a wonderful touristic experience for me, a cultural experience. And I learned a little bit about the soul of Scotland.
Yep. Well, you certainly do with the whiskey. And then, you know, the typical cheers is Slandiva.
What does that mean?
Good health.
Good health.
Yeah.
Well, Ken Hanley from Edinburgh, Slanshava. Thank you very much for joining us.
Slanjrik.
Rick Steves has spent a third of his adult life in Europe researching and writing guidebooks. His now classic, Europe Through the Back Door, teaches the skills of smart travel. At Rick Steves' online travel store, you'll also find guidebooks for London, England, Great Britain, and Ireland. To learn more about Rick's guidebooks for Britain, Ireland, and beyond, visit the travel store at ricksteves.com.